Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. You can find me on Twitter, NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well, where I post more content. Visit the website, dsmsports.net, for more episodes and content. And, of course, follow the podcast. Check it out on your podcast platform of choice. Just a tremendous episode for you guys today. A really, really, really good interview. You're going to want to take notes. It's good for anyone in the social media world, in the sports world, whether they are just coming up in school or a seasoned executive. You're going to learn a ton from Marissa Mast. She is the vice president for social media and brand strategy for the Arizona Coyotes. She does a tremendous job there. And stick around for a ton of great insights and lessons and just so much good stuff, seriously. But before we get to Marissa, this episode is Helpful Tool. This is a helpful tool. Is a little way to get videos off of TikTok without the watermark. If you don't want the watermark, you can use this mobile app or a website called SnapTik, and that is S-N-A-P, SnapTik, T-I-K, .app. Again, you can also download their iPhone app as well, and easily just all you do is input the URL, link of the TikTok that you'd like to download. And then, boom, you have a video with no watermark of any kind on it. The only caveat is it does come out in a square format. So if you're wanting to, you know, straight repurpose to, say, Instagram Reels or Snapchat Spotlight, if you're an individual, then it may not serve your needs without a little bit of editing or adding some bars. But it could be something that, if something's popular, you could do that or put it in the Instagram feed. Of course, you know, whenever you're cross-posting across platforms, there's always a little bit of unease, as there probably should be, but it's a great way to make use of those TikTok videos on the fly quickly, repurposing them perhaps, or downloading a fans or an athlete or whoever it might be that you're following, and you want to maybe splice that video up and not have to worry about that watermark at the top of it. So check it out. Again, you might have a lot of good ideas for it. It's snaptik.app, S-N-A-P-T-I-K.app. All right, stick around for a great interview with Marissa Mast of the Arizona Coyotes. Back from this episode's opening segment, and I am so psyched for today's guest, someone I've been following and knowing for a while. I'm joined on the podcast today by Marissa Mast. She is the Vice President of Social Media and Brand Strategy for the Arizona Coyotes. Welcome to the podcast today, Marissa.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
Really psyched to pick your brain, all things Coyotes. It's starting to feel like hockey season for sure. We're all psyched to have it back. But before we get into the meat of our discussion, want to get to know more about you. Tell us about your career path, how you got into social media, and how you worked your way up in this world, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm super excited. I feel like hockey is right around the corner, and I think we all desperately need some hockey back in our lives. So my career path is a little atypical, which I also think like an atypical path is the typical path these days. There really is like no straight line anymore. And I think that's what's really cool. And that's something I always tell students is like, you can't even try to mimic someone else's career path because everyone is so unique and different. And I think in today's world, great storytellers can come from anywhere and any background. But I actually got my start at E! News in LA, where you're based. And I worked there for 3 years on their new media team, which I think that's now an extinct title, but I think it's now their social digital team. And I had a lot of fun. It was a blast and I learned so much. And I think, I always say like, I really learned a lot about storytelling in the heart of Hollywood because I think nobody does storytelling better, than the entertainment field. And while I was there, I got the opportunity to freelance for the United States Olympic Committee and got to cover Sochi 2014, which now feels like a lifetime ago. It used to feel like last year, and now it seems so long ago. And while I was there, I actually worked for a guy named John Pierce, who would go on to become the chief marketing officer of the Coyotes. And so from that relationship of working for $10 an hour freelance, he then was like, hey, like I just got here and there isn't someone doing social. Would you be interested in joining? And so I went out and went to one game, and then that turned into my first job at the Coyotes, which was social media manager. Mm-hmm. And from there, I've now been there 6 years, which is crazy. I've been able to make my way up, and I've just had a lot of fun, and social media has really evolved, and brand strategy in general. I think so much of that does rely heavily on social and digital, and I think because of the pandemic, even more so now, there's a lot of pressure on social and digital teams to get content out, but to also be a family liaison, to have customer service, to, you know, do the storytelling part, but also there's so many other facets that go into social. And I think like this year alone, like with the launch of Instagram Reels and TikTok's emergence and how heavily we're now relying on other media platforms, I think social has only continued to grow, and it's a really great time to be in the field.
Love that. And yeah, I think you hit it right on the head there. It's social, and social, you really have to have your finger on the pulse of just about everything happening with the organization. You know what's happening with community relations, with fan development, with game ops, with PR, with marketing, with sponsorship. There's nothing that happens at the organization that you kind of don't have some lens into, because social is usually amplifying it, if not at the center of it. And I think that's great to hear about that.
Yeah, I think for sports teams, social media really is like the dot connector. Like you're always working with multiple departments at once. And a lot of times you're filling them in on like, oh, like here's the idea that community relations had, like what can we do? Or how can we, you know, create content around this? You're just constantly working with multiple departments at once and juggling a lot of personalities and needs. And I think you can probably attest to this, but I think one of the hardest things, and like one of my 2021 goals, is like you have to learn to say no to some things. You can't, you know, please everyone. And that's, I think, one of the hardest parts about this job that people probably don't talk that much about, but I think a lot of people feel that way.
Totally. Yeah. And we could really do a whole episode on just this topic alone, of that feeling that you guys in social media are not like an in-house agency necessarily. It's not like when someone asks you, like, you guys are all working on the same thing. You're all working on the same organization. You're all working for the same team. It's not a matter of, oh, if I do something for this department, then I need to, say no to this department. And it's almost like you're not doing favors for people. You're doing stuff because it's for the better of the organization. And, you know, it's collective decisions. It's not just, you know, scratch my back and I'll scratch your type of thing. That's not what it should be about, at least.
Exactly. No, and I think when you're naturally a people pleaser, like you can get really caught up in that. And I think especially when I was young, starting out in the field, I was like, oh, well, I have to say yes. Like the answer is yes. And what's the workaround to make it happen? And now the longer I'm in, the more it's like, well, actually a big part of our strategy is what we're not going to do. And here's why we're not going to do that. Or I think also just going back and saying like, we just don't have the bandwidth, you know, social media teams for sports departments are so small, and there's just like a lot of demand. And I think especially in season when games are going on, it's really hard to make everybody happy. But when you have a clear strategy and you're able to stick to that, and I also think like our team has relied a lot more heavily on analytics, and that way it's less about opinions and more about numbers of what performs well and what doesn't.
Well, I can tell it's going to be a great conversation already. I love this. I want to dip back briefly into your time at EE, because I want to see how that kind of helps connect to what you've done with the Coyotes. And tell me a little about what the goals and what the infrastructure was like at EE, where you are, you know, you're telling stories, certainly. That's always going to be a big part of social media. But you're looking at, you know, promoting content, promoting original content, driving site traffic. You're not trying to sell tickets necessarily. You're not trying to activate sponsors maybe quite as much as you are in the Coyote space. So what were those goals and KPIs for EE, and what were your resources to build off of?
Yeah, so I think at the time, like it was when EE Online was like really becoming super popular, and people weren't just getting their news anymore from the hour-long EE News show. Mm-hmm. And so also like, nobody does award season better than E. And so a big part was like, how do we reach people all over the world, not just via television? And so it was like the launch of like the red carpet live streaming, the launch of Live from E, which was, I mean, I think one of the first like true like shows on Facebook, but they like did a morning segment live for me, which is exactly what it sounds like. And I think they were just really ahead of the times of reaching people wherever they were. So not just thinking of E! News as a TV show. And kudos to them, because now they've created this like massive social media following. Their YouTube channel does amazing. And they've been able to really capitalize and grow fandom so that it wasn't just like a generational thing that grew up kind of obsessing over pop culture. I think social media has really helped them continue. And since I've left, they were one of the first like Snapchat shows. They've just always kind of been, I think, a few steps ahead of everybody else when it comes to thinking about what's next and thinking about growing fandom. And so I think I've been able to learn a lot from them on just like, okay, so that's great if we have a 55-year-old fan, but like, how are we attracting younger fans? And I think that's always been a really big push for the Coyotes is that, as you know, so many people who live in Phoenix already came with their fandom. So they moved from Chicago or New York and they're a diehard Blackhawks fan and you're not going to change that. But how do we make sure that their kids are a Coyotes fan? And like, if their kid was 10, 5 years ago, well, in 5 years, they're going to be 20. Like, how do we start to really make sure that one day they're buying tickets or even while they're in middle school or high school, like asking to like have their birthday party at a Coyotes game. And like, I've always been like really fascinated at like the next generation of fans and trying to bring more people in. And I think that's why we've been quicker than most NHL teams to hop on TikTok, to hop on, and we were the first team to launch on Instagram Reels. And it's really because we don't have a choice. We have to really attract the younger audiences. We can't just like rely on generational fandom like I think some other teams can.
Totally. And I think just even bouncing back to what you're saying about E, how they early on understood that social was not just a marketing channel to push people to a linear platform. That wasn't the end goal. Was, hey, let's use this channel, another way to get our message out, to get people to turn on E on the linear, yeah, on the linear channel. And that's not the point.
No. And another thing that I didn't even realize at the time, because I was so young, but a huge part of driving back to the website was all the sponsorship dollars that they had on it. And mm-hmm. So that's also super relatable now when I think about it to sports. But at the time I just like thought like, oh, like it's great that our web numbers are up, but I didn't realize how much revenue, like by putting Maybelline on the red carpet or things like that. Like I didn't realize how much sponsorship money they were bringing in through their partners. And now working on the sports side, as you know, it's like ticket sales and sponsorship revenue are things you're always thinking about. And I think like the most successful social media teams now are really thinking about revenue every single day. And so I came in with a journalism background, storytelling was my passion. And over the years, I spent a lot more time learning about how do we bring in revenue on social media and like how can we continue to grow there and think about different ways to like really meet the team's goals.
So let's talk about making that move to the Coyotes and really what it was like to have those more, maybe not direct KPIs, but you had people saying, hey, you know, we need to help us sell tickets. Hey, you need to help us activate these sponsors, or here's a sponsor post you have to throw up, and let's not get started there, but maybe we can. And so what were the goals like coming in for you as well as the team and you coming in with somewhat of a blank slate with a new chief marketing officer with a brand that was very much, you know, needing a little bit of a kick in the gut, I guess.
Yeah. And so I think what was nice was when I started, they really said to me, they were like, we love your entertainment background, like just entertain fans and like use social media to like bring more people in. And so I think when I started, social very much was still like a storytelling element. And it was like way before the production that it is now. And I mean, even game days, I think we mainly were just sharing assets on Twitter. Like, and it was basically like live tweeting. It wasn't like this whole production of having graphics ready and photos ready and timing their arrivals and like everything that it is now, where it's such a, I mean, it's such a game day, such a production now. And so that's been really nice. And then I think having it evolve into more has been really helpful on my end, just to be able to continue to grow. But you're right, I remember being in my first meeting with ticket sales and just being like, I mean, I don't know, I have a journalism degree. Like, I don't know where to start with ticket sales. Like, this isn't something that I've ever thought about in my life. And now, obviously, that's such a big part of the fabric. And you're just kind of always thinking of different ways that you can really, I mean, here, I think hockey is the best sport live, and I love Arizona. So I think my passions of hockey and also living in Arizona has really helped me, because to me, it's like, why would you not want to come to a Coyotes game? Like, why would you not want to come see hockey live? Mm-hmm. And so I think that really helps then when I'm trying to like share that. And a big push for us in recent years has been influencer marketing and like having different people showcase what it is like at a Coyotes game, because we all know hockey on TV and hockey live are just two very different experiences. And so for us, it's all about like, okay, if someone's not physically in our arena, like how do we bring them there? And I think influencer marketing has helped us, because like we've had a few like mommy bloggers who say like their 7-year-old son loves it and like can't wait to come back, or we'll have people do it like their a date night there or a girls' night and just kind of like showcase. Like, I think we're all always looking for different things to do. And something that I love about the Coyotes is that it is one of the cheaper tickets in the NHL. So I hope it's not something that you have to like save up all month or year to come to a game. Like, I hope this is something that you can do on a Saturday night for fun with your friends or as a birthday present or a Christmas present.
Yeah, when people don't realize too, the Coyotes Arena is right there in the middle of a bunch of bars and restaurants. So right after the game's over, you can go have the rest of the night out if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, a lot of people do say that. A lot of people say like they're shocked at how much there is to do and like how fun a game day experience is. And so for us, it's like, okay, we'll go tell five more people about it.
For tickets, go to NHL.com/Coyotes. No, kidding. let's dive into influencer marketing a little bit, because I think, you know, it's been – there's been different iterations of influencer marketing in sports, in hockey. I think back to the Lightning with the Bold Social Captains back when mm-hmm. Katie Kauf and James Roy were there. I think even to the LA Kings and what they're doing with their the celebrity announcers in the Fox Sports booth. So when you think about influencer marketing, are you thinking about celebrities that are going to drive a kind of a big push of like, hey, this really cool person is there that someone that would be on E? Is it more about that, like you mentioned, the mommy blogger, it's going to appeal to a certain audience and let's go after each of these audiences? Is it to help people have just a fan's view of a game through someone that has a wide following? So what kind of builds up that influencer marketing strategy, and how has it played out for you with the Coyotes?
Yeah, so we actually separated this past season by micro, macro, and celebrity. Mm-hmm. And so celebrity, we've had like a few, like I think, you know, Frankie Muniz is a big fan. Yep. And Ari from The Bachelor, him and his wife, Lauren, came out to games. And, you know, then when they're in their Kachina jersey and then People Magazine picks it up, like that's a lot of like awesome earned media for us. Yeah. So yeah, so that's definitely like, I don't think you're ever going to turn those people down. But I think a big part of our strategy has been more the micro influencer who lives in Arizona, talks to people who, you know, live in the Phoenix area all day long, and like really having them showcase what a game day is like and why people should want to come to a game or should want to buy the cute beanie and all of those elements that go into it. So not just showcasing the game, but we love when they show like the food options, the drink options, what they did before the game, what they decided to wear. And so usually like what we don't currently have like a paid influencer program, so it's really for trade, but we like to do like awesome seats, and then we'll pair that with parking and some swag, and not just swag for you, but for your kids if they're coming, or your husband, or you're bringing girlfriends, beanies for everyone, and trying to really do what we consider to be a fair trade. So we hope this is more than $1,000 value.
Yeah, and then is the goal to get them to both share on their platforms as well as you guys sharing on your own platforms? Is it like an Instagram story takeover sometimes? Like, how does that work on a given game, on a game night, when you're trying to activate that that activation?
Yeah, and that's usually what it is. So like reaching their audience, but then we love to like amplify from our accounts to engage with them. And like also sometimes it provides opportunities where like that one mommy blogger that I'm thinking about right now, like people are like, oh, well, how loud was it? Was it really cold in there? Like, what age is too young? So that then gives us an opportunity, a community management opportunity, to really go in and say like, oh, it's, you know, 68 degrees, wear a jacket, but you won't be freezing. You know, all these things that we can say that like, and have a one-on-one relationship with people that hopefully convert to become a fan.
I love that. It takes that from idea to reality. And I think a lot of what we're talking about too is, what we're dancing around is that, you know, it's not just a hockey game that you're selling. You're selling an outing, a social outing, an entertainment experience. Yes, there's mm-hmm. exciting hockey on the ice, but there's also entertainment on the video board. There's great food. There's going to be fun music. There's a great atmosphere. And that's really what you're trying to tell across all these different social platforms and social activations is, yes, like get excited about a big goal from Oliver Ekman-Larsson or a big save or whatever it might be, but also realize that there's all this other stuff happening that can be, you know, there's something for everyone there, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I actually was just reading that like the fashion industry is like predicting that like a roaring 20s where like people are going to want to like dress up a lot more and do all these things that we couldn't do in 2020. And I actually feel the same way about sports. Like, I think we all have like had time to realize like experiences mean way more to us than material items. And so I think we're going to see like sports come back in a really big way. And I think we're going to have like stadium, when it's safe to do so, like packed stadiums. And I think everyone can't wait to like be surrounded by strangers when it's safe to do so, and to really have more shared experience with friends and family.
Hell yeah. Getting goosebumps just thinking about it. Love it.
Yeah, me too. Like, I can't wait to, like, hear the national anthem surrounded by strangers again.
So we talked a little earlier about just the demand for content, the volume, but also trying to make sure that you're not sacrificing quality, that it's done with some strategic oversight, strategic insight, so you're not just doing things for the sake of doing them. So when it comes to content production for the Coyotes, first, how do you guys kind of manage the balance of, hey, this is something that, you know, that one of our coordinator can do, or a social media manager can do on their own, versus this is something that we should enlist our video production team to do, and, you know, take away some of the time they might be spending on an in-game element or a TV broadcast element. So how does that give and take work from a content production side, especially as you mentioned earlier, TikTok and Reels and all these different platforms have sprung up that demand more of our time and more of our resources?
Yeah. So I think the big thing for us is that we start with like a content meeting on Monday mornings where we kind of like lay out the games, the stories, the milestones, and the community service, which has been like a really big part of our brand. Like, I think we really want to be like a brand with a purpose, and we want to showcase how much we are giving back to the community and really how important sports are to the fabric of a community and so much more than just ticket sales and a game day. Like, it really is, I think, a huge part of the culture of a city. And so we, on Mondays, like kind of doing that rundown has really helped us to then say, okay, what are we going to prioritize and what is the bandwidth we have? And we've been fortunate to have like a few freelance photographers who could sometimes go cover events where our social team's tied up. And then during the season, I'm a really big believer in hiring good interns and relying on interns. And I know that is not everyone's take, and a lot of people would never in their life dream of an intern hitting send from a brand account, but I've never taken that approach. Like, I've always believed in hiring really good interns. And I think ASU is like a lot of really creative people and like a lot of creative students. So we've been lucky to hire them throughout the years. And some of them have turned into full-time roles, or they've gone on to work for other NHL teams, which like makes me really proud. But I almost think of like our interns as like a coordinator level and our coordinators as a manager level. Like, I love to give more responsibilities than their job probably they originally thought. And I think that's like really helped us, because we've been able to have interns create TikToks for us. We've been able to have interns run our Instagram story. And like a lot of these platforms where the age skews younger, I would almost rather them be talking to those fans than me or an SVP of marketing. Like, I want them to really feel like they're part of our social media marketing team and that they have a voice and a say and that they can bring ideas to the table. And for me, I think that's really paid off, especially, you know, when you're really in the grind of the season and you just need more people. It's been nice that halfway through a season, like, they completely understand how everything works and they're really part of our social team. And I'm always so bummed when we lose them.
Well, I love that. Yeah, I mean, I feel like so much of a lot of time we spend is, or not we, but I at least spend is trying to study these younger generations and figure out, okay, what is appealing to them? Why do they like this influencer so much? And, you know, what can I learn from that? Whereas they're living it. They're actually like, they follow them because that's part of their lifestyle. And you have that intuition, that instinct that they've grown up with because it's always been part of their lives, that they can understand these platforms better than someone that's saying that an outside observer trying to master something at a more strategic level, I guess.
Yeah. And like, I remember last year we were watching a game and there was a fight and our intern was like, oh, there's a perfect TikTok sound for that. And I was just like, okay, you are like living and breathing and thinking in TikToks and I am not. So I'm so happy I have you. And I think like that's what makes a good leader, is when you can like really rely on other people and let them do their job and let them do what they're good at.
Love it. I want to talk briefly about just the brand of the Coyotes. I think, you know, you wear a brand hat there. You understand a lot about, you know, what you're trying to accomplish on all these platforms. And when you have an intern or a coordinator pushing send on little things from copy to TikToks, it's all part of the little things that make up a brand perception, especially for the segment of fans that may only follow the Coyotes on social. And that's the only touch point you have with them. Maybe outside of them coming to games every now and then as well. So what's it like to, whether it's from season to season or just an overarching strategy since you've been there or in the longer term, what does it mean to have a brand for the team and have it play out on social, whether it's, you know, strict guidelines, here's what we sound like, here's what we do in these situations. You know, what does it mean to actually document or convey what that brand is and how it should look on all these platforms?
Yeah, so I think like that's what's really cool about working in social is that I've always said like social media is the front door of your brand. And I think like given the pandemic in 2020, I think even more so social media and digital media and like email marketing and your web, like that's really, people have had to rely on that for their brand. So right now there is no in-game experience. So for those 9 months, like how are we conveying our brand and how are we staying in touch with our fans and staying relevant and still entertaining? And especially like, I felt like a lot of pressure in 2020 that I think sports provide happiness and can provide a laugh and can provide like a distraction from your day to day. And so I think like a lot of our brand has relied on social and digital to convey that. And so I think like for us, like, we've been able to really evolve our brand on social. And I think a really cool part has been able to like bring back the Kachina and the Kachina jersey. And I think, you know, there's been studies about how like Gen Z like loves throwback and like loves making what's old new again. And so I think in a lot of ways, like the Kachina jersey has been like a huge brand win for us. And then also like, you know, still using our other logo and using both. I think one has been allowed us to like have a more serious tone and one's allowed us to have more fun. And I think really getting back to that fun element on social has been important to us.
That's really well put. And I look at the Coyotes too, over the last few years, there's been, you know, the times when the team has struggled and has not made the playoffs. And then there's times when the team is in really the last couple of years, team that has been much better and very competitive. And you've had the excitement of a Phil Kessel coming in. You've had the excitement of a Taylor Hall coming in. Yeah. So when, as you manage sort of the ebbs and flows of the team, the amount of just excitement there is built in because the team is performing well, how does that affect how you guys, you know, strategize at the social level? Are there times when you're like, hey, this is our season, or hey, we just acquired Taylor Hall. Let's make the most of this. This is the time for us to turn those casual fans that may have been to one game into more avid fans that are, you know, live tweeting with us, that are going to more games. What's it like to have those moments of this is our time to capitalize?
Yeah. So I think like one of the best things is like we always go into the season with like a lot of series or elements of just entertaining fans. So that way, like, should you have a 5-game losing streak, like we've always taken the approach that we don't need to rely on wins to have quote unquote good social media. And so I think that at the end of the day has like really helped us that we've had that for so many years that we've been able to like think creatively and think like a media company or an entertainment company. And so we've been able to do things like the Bachelor Report or Home Trippin'. Yeah. And that's allowed us to entertain our fans and get really at the end of the day, give people a reason to follow us besides just in-game action. And then as the wins come, which everyone knows, like they will come eventually. So we've been able to the past few years have a lot more fun with that. And like win engagement is very real. And we've been able to, I think, capitalize on that. And I think like they always say, like becoming championship ready, like internally is something that we've been able to do on our social team is where I think we're really ready and prepared for that opportunity because we've been through the losing seasons. And so we know how to have like a really good balance of pure entertainment and then hockey content and how to use that hockey content to also entertain. And like you said, I think the casual fans do come when you're winning. And so to me, that's a really important time that you almost can't like overshare. I think, you know, constantly sharing highlights, recapping a hat trick the next day, like, there's no such thing, I think, as like oversharing good news and really capitalizing on those opportunities. So like playoffs for us was such a fun time. It also was like, you know, August where it's 110 degrees out. So I think a lot of people were spending more time on their phones and also in the middle of a pandemic, just not as much other distractions. And so I think we were able to really use that time to bring in some casual fans that hopefully when we start up again in January, we'll be there and continue to grow.
Totally. Yeah. And I, first off, I love the term win engagement. That's fantastic.
It's so true though. Like one year we actually tracked, teams' followings during playoffs, and then which is like insane to see the trajectory of followers that you get during playoffs. So you know, when you're able to make like a few cup runs in a few years, you're really able to grow your social media following, and then it's up to you to keep that following and to keep them entertained. And for us, like I think we have like a lower following, but we have like a very incredibly engaged audience. And I think we really do have like a lot of strong people who feel strongly about the Coyotes, which to me is awesome. And like, I love that we're talking a lot of times to really hardcore fans that do love the Coyotes. And then hopefully we'll continue to grow that and convert the casual fan to being a hardcore fan. And our CEO loves to call it the fans in waiting. Like, we know they're out there. So like, how are we entertaining the fans in waiting?
No, I love that. I'm sitting here and it rings very true to me, having been to Coyotes games and seeing those fans that are still howling in the third period when it's 5-2 and you're like, hey, there's 5 minutes left in the game. It's kind of over, but they're just diehard fans that are there.
Exactly. And I feel like hockey brings out a really diehard fan in a lot of people. Like, I think there are a lot of people that feel so, so strongly about it, and it's super fun to be part of.
And I love that you brought up the Bachelor Report and some of the more fun stuff, and you know, having Biz Nasty there for all those years is another way to add that personality to it. So tell me about let's talk about the Bachelor Report in particular, because it's something that became almost a little bit of a phenomenon and something that I've watched too much of. Even though I don't really follow the Bachelor, I still enjoy seeing those hockey players like on a different subject. And so what's it like to start something like that, to get buy-in from all across the board, from the guys in the room, from PR, from hockey ops, and then even internally from marketing, to say this is a good use for our resources and time, and this is how we're going to evaluate success.
So actually, it was Biz that first brought up that like a lot of the guys watch The Bachelor. Mm-hmm. And so he and our old director of production, who I know you know, John Kingston, kind of had like a meeting about it. And I think Biz was just like, they're all watching it. Like, this is such cool content. Like, a lot of people don't realize like what funny personalities we have on the team, and they only really know hockey players on ice. And I know we've talked about this, but like, hockey players are wearing helmets. It's not like the NBA where you can like see their reactions and a lot of times see personality from that. So I think hockey, definitely the NHL in general, like, struggles to really show a lot of the personalities that are definitely there. It's just, how do you showcase it? And so Biz, I think being a former player, just kind of had that like unique approach that probably is the only one that could really get through to all departments and to PR, that this is something that like we should do, and like, it's a huge opportunity. And so this is actually one of my favorite success stories, because then we started that without a sponsor on it, and then we saw that it was like skewing very female, which like made me excited that we were like giving female fans like something to be really excited about, because a lot of sports social accounts skew really male. And it was fun that they were like, okay, wow, these guys like are also watching the same show that I love. Like, we have even more in common than I thought. And so from there, we were then able to pitch it to White Claw, and White Claw loved that it skewed female. So it was kind of like this like perfect success story of like creating great content and then bringing in a sponsor and then bringing in revenue. And I think so many people forget, like, people get so caught up in the process of like, oh, well, we need to pitch this to this sponsor, and we need to bring in money this way. And it's really like, I'm a big believer that like in creating great content and then, you know, getting the analytics to back it up and then selling it and finding the perfect sponsor for it. And so I think like you see NFL teams do that sometimes, but I just feel like so much in sports, like, it's always about like pleasing the sponsor instead of creating great content for great content's sake.
Really well put. And I love the idea of creating that winning franchise and not just doing it for a sponsor, but doing it for the fans. That's a good place to start. It's always a good place to start. And then it's
and people lose sight of that, I think.
Let's talk briefly about how sponsor conduct does come together for the Coyotes. I think you guys do a great job with it. I know, Cole Cook there leads the BI team, there's been a good track record of sponsor conduct for the Coyotes. So you talked about how the Bachelor came together with Bachelor Report came together with White Claw, but generally speaking, how do you guys work with the sponsorship team, with the data team? I love that anecdote about the fact that you guys knew that the Bachelor Report was over-indexing in female fans. And that's not necessarily some knowledge that every social media manager on every team will know about their specific content and who it's resonating with, how it's resonating. So how does stuff come together for the sponsorship and social team? How do pitches work together? And then how ultimately do you guys develop something that's going to be a win for fans and for the partner?
Yes. So I think that's like one of the pros to working for such a small front office, is that we've been able to work really closely with sponsorship. And I think like in my 6 years there, we've come a really long way of just like the process, where it used to be like the start of the season, we would get a list of things that we had to post. And it's like, wait, what? Like, where'd this come from?
Oh, yeah.
And so that is the complete opposite now. Like, we're very involved in the process. And as you mentioned, like, we're really fortunate to have Cole on our team, who has a background from Wasserman and can really value social correctly. Mm-hmm. We also have worked really closely with the Facebook sports team, and Kat from Facebook Sports has really helped us to identify like money left on the table of things that, of assets we are sharing without a sponsor on them, or just more opportunities across like the whole family of Facebook. So Instagram and Instagram stories. But so now it's like a very much like, I think one of the biggest, you know, pros and or advice I can give is that like, to really try to understand each other's job. So we've brought our sponsorship team into meetings with Kat from Facebook. And so they've heard like a lot of like the social side and like how that works and like why certain videos perform better and all of that. And then we've tried to really understand their side and the pitching side and like what more assets can we give you, or can we do a mock-up of it so that you can visually show them, not tell them, and really try to think like each other. And so I think that's really helped us. And I know, you know, like Lindsay Fletta and Matt Karna on our team. And I think also a big plus is like, they've been here there longer than I have. So now that we have 6 years working together, you just start to really get in like your groove of how to create good content and to value it correctly with the help of Cole and Sam. And then they do, our sponsorship team does such a great job of like really putting the sponsor first and, you know, following up or asking if we can make logos bigger for the sponsor. And like, that's their job. And so I have to remember that on my side, like as much as aesthetics are part of my job, like at the end of the day, you want to make the sponsors happy. So how can we all work together to do a better job? But yeah, so now, I mean, we'll have different it works like a few different ways. Like sometimes we'll create great content, like Home Trippin', where we kind of like our version of Cribs, and like we'll create that without a sponsor on it, and then they can pitch it to someone that makes sense. So like, you know, I think they pitch it to like a mortgage company or say like a local real estate company, things like that, that would just make sense. And then there's other times where they say like, we have like a questionnaire for new sponsors and we ask them like which platforms they care about, like who their key audience is, what their biggest goal from social media sponsorship is. And then we're able to like put together something for them specifically. So it works a few different ways. And we've just found that works really well for us. And it's really about like constant communication. And I think just like putting each other first and like trying to create great work for each other.
Totally. Yeah. I think we're now starting to get to the point where the people sitting in these seats, the ones that are buying sponsorships, the ones that are selling sponsorships, someone in your chair, we've kind of all grown up in the social space together. So now we have that intuition where it's not just, hey, social's another billboard, but there's a better way to do this, that we should be putting the fans first. And we want all of our goals to be accomplished together, because we're all going to succeed if we all succeed. We're all going to fail if we all fail. And so it's great to have that intuition is starting to play out across the board, because this is, you know, our generation's coming of age, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, so we've come a really long way. And like, I think like some of my biggest advice for people starting out in the field is like, really think about how social media ties back to revenue in whatever field you're in, whether it's sports, entertainment, et cetera. I think like trying to find ways to tie social media to revenue will help you, I mean, help you grow in your career and hopefully create more job opportunities, higher salary, et cetera.
Well, one more thing before we get to the charitable stat with Marissa Mass, Vice President of Social Media and Brand Strategy for the Arizona Coyotes. You set me up perfectly for this last question for you, and that is how you've been able to elevate to a vice president role. And you and I were talking offline a little bit about how, you know, we're seeing Andy with the Penguins become a VP, yourself become a VP, and it's cool that I feel like I've grown up with this generation, and now seeing your folks like you get into a VP role, it's like, yeah, hell yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, how have you seen the value of social grow up within the organization there? You mentioned, you talked just before about, you know, making sure you're tying into revenue and being able to have those higher level conversations about the bottom line for the organization. It's not just, hey, here's our engagements for the month, but here's how we can tie to some of our goals, whether it's reaching new fans, activating new platforms, activating sponsors. And so like, how have you seen your capability to, you know, really elevate yourself into those higher level conversations within the organization and ultimately ascend to a VP role?
Yeah. So, and I think that's like one of the coolest things now when I talk to students about the social media career path is like that I'm able to say like, it really does, there really is a career path there. And I was telling you earlier, but like, I remember someone said to me like early on 2014, they were like, don't take a job where social media is in your job title, because that's such a fad. Like, make sure it's like marketing manager or strategy, marketing strategy. Like, just make sure it's not just social media, because that's a fad and that's not going to be a job in a few years. And so it's crazy to me, and it makes me, like, I think, really proud to see the way so many people in this field have been able to really, it snowballed into more work and it snowballed into more opportunity. And I think, like, a really big part is that, like, I think I was a manager for 2.5 years and just doing the really hard work and doing it 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And I think that's, like, then helped me, you know, earn the trust of other executives, and then also, you know, be able to vouch for myself on the work we were doing, or the ticket sales, or the revenue, and, you know, really trying to showcase that social media is so much more than what it used to be of just, you know, push posts and entertaining fans. There really now is a huge revenue opportunity there. And I think that's, like, a really key for people who are feel like they're stuck in a manager role or, you know, a coordinator role. I think tying it to revenue and showcasing how you're bringing in more opportunities or entertaining more fans. And I think, like, tracking the growth of followers or your engagement rate, whatever it is. And then also how many new platforms there are. So, like, in the past year and a half, like, we've added TikTok, we've added Instagram Reels, we created a Facebook group for our diehard fans, we have a LinkedIn presence. Like, those are things that weren't, you know, even part of the job a year and a half ago. So I think being able to, like, say yes and to, like, dive into more work and not shy away from it has paid off. And I think at the end of the day, like, I always just put Coyotes fans first. So I don't really think about how hard it's going to be or how much more work it's going to be on our plate. Like, if there's, like, a need for it, or I think we can reach new fans, like, I've always said yes. And, like, I think I mentioned this earlier, but, like, to me, like, getting on Instagram Reels or TikTok, like, wasn't a question, because we need to reach younger audiences. And if we're going to continue to grow Coyotes fandom, like, we have to meet fans where they are.
I'm just inspired here. Like, it's really, really cool to hear how you think about yourself being in service of fans, in service of reaching those fans that don't even know the Coyotes exist, that can become fans. And it's just cool to hear that almost, like, selfless way you look at it of, yes, this is going to be more work for me and my team, but this is for the fans, and so we have to do it, and we're going to do it up to a standard that we've established. It's awesome to hear that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And back to what I mentioned, but, like, I think that's where having interns has really helped us. And, like, we've had interns with, like, insane photography skills. We have an intern run our TikTok. I mean, we have just really been able to, like, capitalize on bringing in more help so that we can reach new fans. And same thing with Snapchat. Like, we always had an intern on Snapchat on game days. And we were, like, at the end of the day, we're like, you're talking to your peers. So, like, obviously, like, we have guidelines, and we, at the end of the day, have, like, want to be respectful, and we want to have fun, but we don't want to, like, you know, cross the line by any means. And so I think, though, by bringing in more people, we've been able to, like, reach new audiences.
Well, I'm ready to jump on the ice and go after it now. You've inspired me and give me a nice fire under me. So before we hit the ice, we're gonna have some short shifts coming up in our next segment. First episode shareable stat, we'll be right back with that.
Okay.
Just a phenomenal time chatting with Marissa Mass of the Arizona Coyotes. Really learned so much from her. She is also just a delight to talk to, and you're going to have some more from her coming up in our short shifts segment. But first, this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat actually comes from a recent conference where the SVP of Marketing for Major League Baseball, Barbara McHugh, was talking about how they studied their video content during the 2020 season on Twitter in particular, and they found that content coming from their live content correspondents, the folks that are on the field, typically getting content from a DSLR, not working for Getty, not doing this professional stuff, that are not broadcast highlights, content from their LCCs, they call them, outperformed highlights from the game, from the typical broadcast highlights, by 21% when it comes to engagement. Now, there's a lot to take away from that. Of course, highlights are still going to be table stakes for a lot of teams and leagues, and, you know, that's a big, big part of the game. But when you can get highlights in a lot of different places, whether it's, you know, another media outlet site or YouTube, certainly, or any number of other people that are retweeting and amplifying the same highlight you see elsewhere, whereas that LCC content, that more intimate content, the raw content, the stuff that feels like you're getting different kind of access than we've become accustomed to over several years. But now that's what social media can allow. So really take away from it that, yes, you know, you still want to do that produced content at times. It's the right place. And highlights are a big part of being a sports fan, of course. But think about what content can you as a team or a league or even as a media outlet provide that your fans aren't going to get elsewhere. Something special, something that's beyond what the typical experience might be like. So that's a social shareable stat. Pretty interesting to me. Looking at the live content, correspondent content, video content versus highlights on the MLB Twitter feed. And they found that the LCC content outperformed the highlight content by 21% in engagement. All right, stick around for a great, great segment to finish off with Marissa Mast of the Arizona Coyotes.
Right back from this episode's Shareable Stat, and I am joined once again by Marissa Mast. She is the Vice President for Social Media and Brand Strategy with the Arizona Coyotes. Go Yotes. we had a tremendous conversation. Are you now ready to take some short shifts?
Let's do it.
All right, number one. Tell me your favorite Coyotes campaign or franchise on social media.
Oh, that's hard. So we recently did one that I think like I feel like really proud of, and I think our sponsorship team does too, but we did a campaign called Fries from the Guys. And so this was during the pandemic and the start of the pandemic, and we partnered with Fry's Food Stores, who's one of our biggest sponsors. And our players all really wanted to give back during this time. And I think a lot of them were really confused and didn't know how to help or where to get started. And so we ran this campaign through Facebook, a paid Facebook ad, and it was like, it was called Fries from the Guys. And so we were asking people to nominate a local hero that we would then give a $500 Fries Food Stores gift card to, just to help, you know, lighten the load or make 2020 a little bit easier for them. And we received thousands and thousands and thousands of submissions. And the stories were just like so touching of, you know, people nominating their parents or their brother or ICU nurses or grocery store workers. And then we started with a sum of like $10,000 that we were going to give back, and we were able to double that and then triple that and really, I think, you know, give back to fans across Arizona. And I think we reached so many people that weren't just Coyotes fans and could really, you know, think of ourselves as a member of the community and not just a sports team.
Oh, that's so powerful. That's so cool to hear. And I also just love hearing the fact that like it's you guys partnering with players, the players saying, hey, we have these platforms, we know we can do something, but you know, help us do something. And you guys work together and just tremendous.
Yeah. Success. And 2020 honestly has been pretty hard for like players volunteering because they're so restricted on what they can do with their time and where they can be. So like even this past Christmas, like they weren't able to physically go to Phoenix Children's Hospital. And so I think by like setting this up, it gave players a great opportunity to donate money. And of course, Oliver was the first one to step up and donate the most. But I think it meant a lot to them to be able to give back to, you know, these people that at the end of the day, like are their family and their fan base.
Oh, so cool. All right, number two for you, Marissa, tell me your number one tip or lesson about building a brand for a sports team.
I think one of my biggest tips that I think like really gets, you know, people don't think about it as much or they think so much about the tactics, but I think one of my biggest tips is to just have fun with it and to realize like at the end of the day, like social media is meant to be social. It's meant to be fun. It's not, the more you like think things, I'm always telling our players this, like don't overthink too much what you're sharing. I mean, social media is meant to really be a fun outlet that provides entertainment and like hopefully, you know, provides joy or a distraction from your day.
Nice. I like that a lot. All right. Number three. This is one I really want to hear the answer to because I am inspired by it. Tell me your number one lesson so far from being a working mom. You have a 17-month-old daughter. So tell me, what's it like being a working mom for a sports team in particular?
It's honestly a lot harder than I feel like I knew it was going to be hard, but it's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. I just feel like you go from like being able to give all of your time to your job to then realizing like I physically can't, and I also don't want to give all my time to my job anymore. But I think once you get into like a really good groove, so like for me, I really try from like, you know, 5 to 7, 7:30 or 4 to 7, whatever it is that day, to not be working and to spend time just focusing on being a mom and not even like look at my phone. And I think like the beauty of social media is that hours are different. Like it's not your typical 9 to 5. So if you're starting to respond to emails at 6 or you have a game that starts at 7, like I think you can take from 4 to 7 to really, you know, spend time with your family and put them first, because at the end of the day, like you are working for your family. Like you're doing that to provide for your family and not just be just focused on your career. So I think it was an adjustment phase for sure. But then I think once you really get into your groove, like there's nothing better than being able to do both. And I always say like, I hope to be a working mom till the day I die. Like, I think it's like really healthy to have two outlets and to be able to like do my own thing. And also I think in raising a daughter, it's fun to show her like what it's like to have a career that you love and that you're excited to go to and that you're passionate about and that you don't just feel like you're going to work for the sake of going to work.
Oh, you are a superhero to me. That's fantastic to hear.
But yeah, so I feel like finding balance and then also, you know, just prioritizing things differently and taking it all day by day.
Yeah, I love it. I am not a working mom or working dad at this point in my life, but I am blown away by the fact that you're able to balance it and in a really healthy way. So my hat's off to you for sure.
Thanks.
All right, number 4 here, Marissa. Tell me, going back to your time with the Olympics, back in 2014, what's your favorite memory from those times?
Oh, 2014 would definitely be TJ Oshie's goal.
Yeah.
And then I also covered Rio 2016. And I think that was probably 1, Michael Phelps, and then 2, Simone Biles. I think like she's just so cool. And it was such an emergence. And I think, you know, I think girls gymnastics or women's gymnastics is really going to help continue to grow Olympic fans. And it was cool to see the younger audience be so engaged with her and all of the gymnasts in general. But I think the Olympics, like a lot of things, like they face a struggle of like, how do we continue to grow fandom? And I think gymnastics is going to help that.
Yeah, I like that observation for sure. Like, I even think about like the momentum from Michael Phelps, and now you have the swimming league, then I think it's the ISL, International Swimming League, and you know what could come out of gymnastics for that as well, and how can we keep that momentum outside the Olympic cycle? And that's a cool watch.
And in general, the coolest thing about covering an Olympics is just like seeing a country come together, and like I think it's so cool that like all of your friends are cheering for the same team, whereas like you're so used to your social media being so divided on like Sundays for their NFL team and things like that.
Right.
It's really cool thing when like all of your coworkers are cheering for Team USA and all of your friends are cheering for Team USA. And I'm so excited for the summer because I think it's just going to be perfect timing to bring our country together.
Heck yeah. Can't wait. Well, a fun hockey season before that, then our present Raptors Stanley Cup, we get the Olympics. It's going to be
a 2021 is going to be good.
Number 5, Marissa, tell me the best current or recent Coyotes player on social media and why. And also part 2, I just want to hear what it's like working with Paul Bissonnette.
I think Jason Demers is naturally very good at social media and has like a really fun personality. And I think he also, credit to him, doesn't take himself too seriously, where I think so many young athletes today are too in their head about social media or just want to focus on their sport. Oliver is definitely a good one. I think, Christian Fisher is one of our best athletes for like when we need content. He's kind of like our go-to guy. Like, you know, he'll do a TikTok for us. So I think, you know, on this end, like you really appreciate those players that, you know, will say yes and like won't give you a hard time about it and just genuinely want to have fun with it. But we're fortunate. We've had a lot of good characters come through. Jordan Martinuk was always super helpful and super fun.
Yeah.
Just different players. Brad Richardson was great and we just lost him. But yeah, it's good to have players that you know you can count on to have fun and not take it too seriously. And then Paul Bissonnette, he's awesome. I think the Coyotes are so lucky to have him, and he's been such a good ambassador, I think, just for the NHL in general. I think one of the best things the Coyotes ever did, and this is way before my time, but I've heard Biz talk about this, but they just like let him be him. And that's really cool. And I don't think you see that at every organization. I know you don't see that at every organization or every sports league. And I think some leagues struggle with that more than others. But I think at the end of the day, like you have to let athletes be them. And hopefully it allows them to have a career afterwards where they can work in broadcasting or social.
Yeah.
And, you know, just provides more opportunities for them and allows them to bring in more income. And I think I love that other NHL players can now look at this and think of other ways to create revenue after they're done playing.
Where do you think that comes from? Like, is it more the coaches? Is it like the cap, the veterans on the team? Is it the GM and the hockey ops? Or like, is it PR staff of who really kind of, maybe not encourages, but doesn't discourage players from being active on social?
Yeah, I think every team's different. I think some have really strict GMs. I think some have stricter PR teams. And I think, like, credit to Rich, but he's done this job forever and has such a one-on-one relationship with all of the players that I feel like he probably, I didn't work for the team, but I'm sure he knew, like, this is who he is. And, like, you can monitor it a little bit, but, like, you know, no one's going to tell LeBron what to tweet and not to tweet. So, like, why wouldn't we treat every athlete that way? And so I think it's really cool. And I'm a really, really big advocate of players building their own brand. I want to see them all build their brand, and I want to see them all take advantage of the tools that they have. And so I hope that, like, young players coming in know that they can always request photos, or we can help them with copy. A lot of them, like, get hung up on copy or things like that. And so I'm just like, yeah, I'm a huge advocate of players being brands themselves. And I think if done right, athletes are your best ambassadors.
Heck yeah. Very much in agreement there. Love that. Yeah. Number six, tell me the most memorable story or piece of content that you worked on during your time back at E.
Oh, yeah. Well, I feel like I was at E during kind of like the Kardashian craze and like rise to the top. So that was definitely like memorable. But I always loved award season. Like, I just think it's like, it's kind of similar to sports where it's this adrenaline rush. Yeah. And like covering a red carpet is probably the thing I can probably compare most to sports and covering a live game or the Olympics. But so much of like entertainment is very scripted and all of that, but award shows aren't, and they definitely have that adrenaline rush and the emotions that I think sports do. So that was always my favorite part, and I think that adrenaline rush is what I noticed I had when I covered Sochi, and that's kind of like what led me to wanting to work in sports full-time.
That's perfect. I think a lot of times we look at live sports and the closest analog really is award shows. That's the only, like, one of the last remaining live events that really brings a lot of people together, all reacting to this drama at the same time.
Yeah. I loved award season. And then it would end, and then you'd be like, like, you'd kind of wait for the next one. So I think the beauty of sports is, like, seasons are longer, and off seasons, well, this year we've had two off seasons, but usually they're not too long.
Number seven for you, Marissa, tell me the most memorable game from your time with the Coyotes so far in your 6 years there.
Oh gosh. I mean, I think some of like Doan's milestones were awesome because the fan base just adores him so much, and they, you know, kind of watched him grow up. So those were all really memorable. His retirement ceremony was really memorable. Our Lamont, who's now gone on to Seattle, but our production team just, I think, killed it. And I remember thinking, like, how do you really properly honor him? And they somehow did it, and that went above and beyond. And then I'll always remember this summer, like, you know, covering the games remotely. I think, like, the fans in the Valley were so starved for playoff hockey, and they got it, and it was fun to be part of it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Lots of good memories there already, and more to come in the future, no doubt.
Yes, I hope so. I hope it just keeps getting better.
Number eight, it's time for our food question. We always like to ask food questions. So tell me, when I come in and see a game out there in Phoenix, what's the best meal to get? Where do we go get it?
Oh, so at the arena?
No, anywhere in the greater Phoenix, Scottsdale, Glendale area.
Oh, okay. I feel like when you're in Arizona, you have to do like margaritas and Mexican food, just because I feel like someone does that so well. I also went to school in Dallas, who does it well, but Tex-Mex is a little bit different. So I think one of my favorite like go-to spots is Chelsea's Kitchen, and I think they just have a great patio and great margaritas and kind of a combination of like Mexican food, but also some seafood.
Nice. Yeah. When it's 90, 100 degrees outside and you need a nice frozen margarita, that's perfect.
Yeah. I just feel like when you're in Arizona, you kind of have to have a margarita.
how about if we go back to Buffalo, where you have your heart there in Buffalo, where to go in Buffalo for the best food?
Well, you have to have wings. I also really like Buffalo's pizza. There's a place that I recommend some of our PR guys go to downtown called Chef's, which has amazing, amazing chicken parmesan, which I think people don't really think about in Buffalo. You're always thinking about wings, which my favorite wings are at Gabriel's Gate, which is also kind of like, I think not as talked about as much. So those are my two recommendations, and they're both near the Sabres Arena.
Very nice. Hey, coming from a first-party source, so you know it's good.
Yeah, Buffalo is such great food. I miss it.
All right, last one for you, Marissa. This can take us however you want. Just tell me any sort of bold prediction or hot take for social media for 2021.
Oh, I think. Okay, I kind of feel like we're going to, like, revert backwards a little bit to content being less so produced. I think we've like almost hit our limit of how produced content can get. And, you know, like I feel like graphics and video, everything has gotten so flashy and so produced. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, some of the best content is shot on your iPhone. My friend Jess Isner, who works for the Rangers, I think does this really well, but she travels with the team and she just like captures content on the fly a lot. And to me, I think we're going to see a lot more of that on social. I think people miss that. And especially with like Instagram stories and all of that, I think just like keeping it simple is going to make a comeback.
Love that. Yeah. It definitely feels like there's like some sort of graph you can picture where once you hit a certain point of like production quality, it's like you lose a little bit of the fan, just whether it's trust or how they relate to that content or just it's a different feel for sure.
Yeah, and I feel like millennials, like we were all really into the flashy content and the highly produced, and I think Gen Z isn't as into that, and they're really more about keeping it real and authentic. So I think you're going to see people catering to them a lot more.
Hashtag no filter.
Yeah, exactly.
Marissa did a great job with your short shifts. You earned your way to more ice time for sure. it's now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. Can be whoever on whatever platform. Tell us who they are and why they're worth following.
Oh, okay. So in the sports world?
However you want. Someone that we should all be following for whatever reason.
I think in the sports world, as I mentioned, my friend Jess Isner at the Rangers. She's definitely a good person to follow. And I feel like she doesn't like toot her own horn enough. But on Instagram, one of my favorite people to follow is Heather McMahon, who I don't know if you follow her, but she is a comedian and she's just so hilarious. And I think I've just found myself in 2020 like wanting more humor on social media. And I actually worked with her at SoulCycle when we lived in LA. So I always feel like I'm like talking to a friend when I see her content. But if you're not already following her, I definitely recommend it because we all need more laughter.
Heck yeah, I love that. Yeah, I feel like in 2021 we all should be following more comedians across social media.
I feel like social sometimes has gotten so serious, and I don't know. That's like when I said like at the beginning, like going back to just having fun. Like I don't think it needs to be so serious and so highly produced.
Nicely put. All right, and how about yourself, Marissa? Where can we find you as well as all things Coyotes on digital and social media?
Oh, so my handle is @Marissa_Mast, and at the Coyotes, it's all @Arizona Coyotes, except for TikTok and Snapchat, where it's NHL Coyotes.
Across the board, follow the Coyotes. They are producing some great content, and it's just a delight to get to talk to you today, Marissa, and learn from you, and really appreciate you taking some time before this sprint of a season comes to start here.
Yes, and definitely follow us on TikTok, because Casey and our team is doing such a great job there.
Oh, I'm excited now.
Well, thanks so much for having me. We'll have to catch up again soon.
Heck yeah, I can't wait.
Thank you so much again to Marissa Mast, Vice President of Social Media and Brand Strategy with the Arizona Coyotes. They are in the midst of the season now, exciting to have hockey back in our lives, and Marissa is doing her best to balance it all, no doubt, and definitely follow the Coyotes and all your favorite social media platforms, and because they're constantly putting out great creative content, and as Marissa spoke to, tying in revenue and marketing and brand as well. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for joining me. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. Would love to hear from you on Twitter at NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well. And visit the website, dsmsports.net, and check around for more episodes and content. And you can always subscribe and check out the podcast and all your favorite podcast platforms. Until next time, this is Neil Horowitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.